And good evening. We are coming your way from Williamsport, Pennsylvania for the third annual Little League Classic. The Pittsburgh Pirates and the Chicago Cubs. The Pirates were involved in the inaugural Little League Classic, taking on the St. Louis Cardinals. Greg Brown here in this tiny little cozy booth with the Pirates general manager of the Neil Huntington Show, which comes your way every Sunday. And Neil, you were here 2 years ago. What was the experience like, and what do you think of this whole Little League Classic?
Well, it is one of those special moments of my professional career in terms of then and now. A little cooler here tonight. It was thanks to that shower that rolled through. We've cooled off quite a bit, but the ability to go to Little League World Series, and for baseball fans anywhere, that is a must do for baseball fans, to go to the Little League World Series. That environment, that culture, the excitement, the enthusiasm, the ability that these young players show, just to go watch them. But then to add into it, watching our Major League players, even the Cubs Major League players, or 2 years ago watching the Cardinals Major League players interact with these young men and girls, young boys and young girls that want to become Major League players, and the ability to sit with Josh Bell, the ability to sit with Chris Archer, you name it, Felipe Vasquez, Elias Diaz, watching him interact with the team from Venezuela, just awesome. The plane lands, the three teams get off the buses, they greet our bus, the players descend down the stairs, and the excitement, the enthusiasm on those young players' face. Today it was from Louisiana, New England, and Venezuela. Watch the guys interact, and watch our players light up, because they recognize just how special it is, and to be a small part of that, to be an observer in that process, just simply awesome.
Do you expect that the Pirates will be involved in this about every other year? Could this kind of be a fairly regular thing?
You know, it's Major League Baseball's decision. I would love for the Pirates to be involved in this as frequently as Major League Baseball would have us, because it's a great route finder for our players to remind them of how special the opportunity they have is to create memories for these young players, to create memories for themselves, and to revisit why they play this game, to get back to the pure passion that exists with these Little League World Series players and competitors, and the joy that they play with is just fantastic.
Now, Neil, set this up for us and for our listeners, and for those who've not been here. We're in central Pennsylvania. We're probably 45 minutes from State College, I would think. We're a little north of Harrisburg. We're pretty much in the north central part of the state. How far are we from those Little League games themselves that take place on two fields, essentially? We are in a ballpark, because the impression I had initially, and I think still people believe, that the Pirates and the Cubs are playing in a Little League ballpark here today. That's what the impression is for those
who
have not been here.
Sure, and that's the part of it is two distinct facilities. One is Little League World Series facility itself. There's the main diamond, which is the diamond that you see on TV that when you watch the Little League World Series. They have a second diamond that is almost the same as the first diamond, and that's where the second tier of games are played. Then you go down a little bit more of a hill, and they've got two or three other game fields that they'll play early on in the process, but they try to get as many games as they can on the main diamond or on the second diamond. It's just like going to a minor league ballpark. There's concession stands, there's barbecue, there's ice cream. There's just things for the kids to watch. There's video games, and that's the Little League World Series complex itself, and that is fantastic. Again, that is one of these special experiences for a baseball fan to go through. And for example, we were watching the team from Virginia play a team from the Midwest, and just watched those athletes compete, and then we went down to the field too, and were a part of the game beginning ceremonies, the introductions. With a team from Japan and a team from Mexico. And again, to see those kids' faces as they come out of the dugout and get high-fived by nine Major League players as they go to line up on the first baseline is just so cool. Now, when that ends, and we were there probably, our bus left the ballpark this morning about 8:30. It's about a 45-minute flight, transportation time from the ballpark to the airport, from the Pittsburgh airport to the Williamsport airport. and then it's probably another 25 minutes to the Little League complex. So travel time in of itself, you go to Little League World Series, participate in a bunch of activities there, and again, just you've got Little League players that are just hanging out with Major League players in the stands watching another two Little League teams play. And just fantastic to watch the Little Leaguers bounce around. And yes, they're getting autographs, but they're also asking questions. And they're asking Starling Marte about his youth and his experience. The kids from Venezuela are just all around, Vasquez and Elias Diaz and the kids from the South. And four kids line up, and they want to know about Clint Hurdle and managing a game. And they're catching with our pitching coaches and asking for advice and guidance. But then they're also connecting with Cole Tucker and you know, Kevin Newman and Adam Frazier. So once that finishes, we get back on the buses, and now we head to a different facility, which is a short season A facility, a short season A team, like there is in Morgantown, like there
that's
is in State College,
now.
And that's where we are now, and that's at Williamsport. And Major League Baseball came in 3 years ago before the inaugural Major League or Little League Baseball Classic, and renovated the field and gutted the field, and it's now one of the nicer short season fields in baseball, but it is. It's two distinct facilities. This is where the Williamsport, I believe their name is Crosscutters. They're the Phillies' short season A affiliate, like ours is in Morgantown. Morgantown will play here this year, but it's a small 3,000, 4,000 seat facility that Major League Baseball has come in, renovated. The field is beautiful, and Major League Baseball has made this a first-class event.
In fact, the Pirates were here way back when, 1999 through 2006, the Cubs initially, and as Neil says, the Philadelphia Phillies currently here at historic Bowman Field, second oldest minor league ballpark still in play in pro ball. And Neil, you say that now it's up to big league standards now. Had you seen this ballpark before 2 years ago?
I had not.
And I'm certain you've talked to others who had. And it's a stark contrast between what it was then and what it is now.
It is. It's a reminder of how fortunate we are to be in Morgantown, because Morgantown is a beautiful facility. Before that, we were in State College. And there are some lesser facilities in the New York Penn League and in the Appalachian League. Major League Baseball, this playing field plays like a Major League playing field. The distances are the same. The amenities for the players are different. Where there's a training tent, there's a cafeteria tent. The batting tunnel is a tent, which made it very interesting as weather rolled through today with high winds and risk of hail. We all had to and lightning. We all had to get out of the tents and go back into the clubhouse, which is a short season A clubhouse, very small, very compact. The weather rolled through, and we were able to get back to work and get ready to win a ball game here tonight.
And we will continue talking with the Pirates general manager from historic Bowman Field here in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, getting ready for the Little League Classic. It's the Cubbies against the Berg. And we'll continue with the Neil Huntington Show on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back here with the Neil Huntington Show as the Pirates and Cubs play in the Little League Classic in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Neil, explain this 26th man and the move that was made today. The Pirates option Cole Tucker. You recall the pitcher Montana Durapo, and now Cole Tucker is the 26th man, and he knows it, and he knows, therefore, he's going back down to the minor leagues after tonight.
He does, and that, as we walk through this, obviously we have the added dimension of the suspensions. Osuna is our suspended player right now. He will get activated again on Tuesday, at which time Kyle Crick will get suspended for his three games. The 26th man has to be a position player. They didn't want us to be able to add a 14th pitcher and theoretically even a 13th pitcher. So by having Cole come up and be eligible to play Friday and Saturday, we took our bench back to essentially a four-man bench, a seven-man bullpen, and a five-man rotation to be at 24. We're obviously playing a player short. We don't get to replace Osuna when he's suspended, like we didn't replace Kella, or we won't be able to replace Crick. So you play a man short during these types of suspensions. So as we look at the first game in Los Angeles with the DH, it's easier to play with a three-man bench because you're really not pinch hitting. We wanted to get back to a four-man bench for Friday and Saturday. We wanted to see where our pitching was. And by optioning Cole last night, the player that you recall to be the 26th player can be within their 10-day window. So we kind of worked within the rules to have Cole as our 25th man essentially on Friday and Saturday. The 26th man must be a position player, but he can be within the 10-day option window. So by optioning Cole technically post-game last night, he could become the 26th man today, and he just traveled with us this morning when we flew over here. Durapau gives us an extra reliever to benefit from the 26th man. Tomorrow we'll drop back to 25, and we'll see where we are from a pitching and position player standpoint. If we stay as is, yes, Cole Tucker has to go back as the 26th man. He's required to be optioned tonight post-game, and then we'll make a decision. Do we stay with the extra pitcher and go with an 8-man pen, a 5-man rotation, and a 3-man bench, or do we add a position player just for tomorrow until Osuna is ready to be activated again on Tuesday?
So Durapau could stay then?
Durapau could stay, yes. Yeah. And that if we need the pitching, then Montana will stay. If we don't need the pitching, then we could turn Montana back out, or another option of a reliever back out, and then bring a position player for tomorrow. But the best way for us in our minds to get the best available position player was to recall Cole for Friday, Saturday, option him, and then have him be the 26th man, because the 26th man has to be a position player.
Neil, I've had Pirate fans, I'm sure you have too. You've heard a lot from a lot of different people. But one of the things people are wondering about is, with Eric Gonzalez struggling, why not keep Frazier in the lineup, let Newman play short every day, and if anything, let Cole Tucker maybe come up here and then have Newman play second. But why is Eric Gonzalez continually getting these opportunities?
Well, Cole's still in his first year in AAA. Cole is still learning and developing both offensively, defensively, and on the bases, and learning how to be a 144-game player, which will transition into 162-plus game player, hopefully. Adam Frazier continues to do a nice job when we give him appropriate rest. Kevin Newman has provided us with the opportunity to bounce over to second base. And Eric Gonzalez is again, we understand that the struggles that he's had. He's a player that we believe is a very good defensive shortstop, is a better hitter against left-handed pitching. So you've almost fallen into, it's a dirty word, but a platoon situation, because Adam Frazier can hit left-handed pitching, but it allows us to rest Adam. It gets Eric in the lineup and keeps Kevin Newman in the lineup, versus bringing Cole Tucker up here in August when he's going to play one out of three games, one out of four games. Let him continue to grow and develop in AAA, because he's still refining some things. Give Eric Gonzalez another shot and keep Adam Frazier and Kevin Newman fresh by being able to bounce Eric in there once or twice a week.
What, Neil, do you think is the goal at this point, where the Pirates are in the standings? It's not mathematically eliminated, but the Pirates are not going anywhere in the postseason, 51-71 record. So what is your goal? What's the organization's goal between now and the end of the season? Well, is there a number of wins you'd like to have, or is it more important to have these guys get playing time?
Winning is always a better environment than losing, and I would love to say we're going to repeat 2012. 2011, we were in first place in late July. We had a very bad August and September. 2012, we were in first place into July, I think even into August. We were in a competitive playoff race into August, and we went 6-20-something in September. The core of that team is the team that won 94 games in 2013. In terms of playing time, Brownies, the guys that are players in their first full season, their second full season, their third full season, they're the ones that are getting the playing time. The two exceptions, I guess you could, Cole Tucker, with Kevin Newman and Adam Frazier, still young players in their development stages and earning their next steps in the game. And I guess maybe Ke'Bryan Hayes is the one that you could say, well, how come Ke'Bryan isn't up here yet? Ke'Bryan hasn't shown us that he's ready. Ke'Bryan is still a terrific defender. That guy that we saw in spring training, the power to all fields, the attack mindset, he has not shown up in AAA for a variety of reasons, and we're working to get him back to that. So that's why Colin Moran, with 70 RBIs, continues to play third base. But as you look around the diamond, the guys that are getting the majority of the playing time are guys that we intend to have be here next year. And again, like that 12 team that turned into that 13 team, with a few minor major league free agent additions that turned into significant free agent additions in Russ Martin and Francisco Liriano. But the core of that 12-13 team that went from 6-20-something in September, and Armageddon had hit, and the narrative around was incredibly negative and incredibly angry, because we were never going to win again. The core of that group is what became the 13 group that won 94 games and got us back into the postseason. And you go around the diamond, and And yes, there's reasons for concern, but there's also a lot of reasons to celebrate. And we've got some good young players here. We've got to get some pitching back on the right track. Mitch Keller going tonight. These are valuable innings for him and valuable experience for him as we look to have him hopefully be a part of our 2020 rotation. But these additional at-bats for Brian Reynolds and Josh Bell, Marte continuing to finish strong. So what is our goal for September? Our goal for September is to continue to gain experience, to give these guys opportunities to go from second-year players to third-year players. But we're also here to win games, and we want to finish strong. We want to set the tone for next year, and we want to, again, reestablish that this isn't the end of the world, and that this really tough stretch, as statistically unlikely as it was, it happened. If you run 10,000 simulations on teams that are supposed to be a 500 team, eight times would you run into a 4-24 stretch according to FanGraphs. So less than 1% chance of what we just experienced. But what we experienced is real. So now how do we learn from it? How do we grow from it? We remind ourselves that 7 of the losses were by one run. We remind ourselves that by, I think it was 15 or 16 of the losses were by one or two plays, where they hit a grand slam, they hit a three-run homer, we didn't. We grounded into a double play with the runners with the bases loaded. We didn't get a big hit. We didn't make a big defensive play. We made a base-running mistake. Those are all things that we can learn from, and inexperienced teams need to learn, need to grow, need to get better, and that's where we need to finish this season strong and build some momentum for next year and repeat 2012 into 2013. And we get that rings hollow to some of the fan base, but it is real. We've been here before. We've done this before. It's not fun. It's not easy. It's not guaranteed. We need to be better. I need to be better, and that's the goal for September.
And you're not saying, Neil, that you talk about the 1% chance the team would finish where they that losing 24 of 28 and where they are now. Even with that, you're not looking at 500 as the base. You're looking at making up a lot of ground between now and next year.
No, and my point was a team that was projected to, I'm sorry, I wasn't clear, a team that was projected to be 500, which most of the external experts had us about a 500 team. That team, if you run 10,000 simulations, in eight of those simulations, does that team have a 4-24 stretch? So less than 1% chance for a team that was supposed to be a 500 team, they call it a true talent 500 team, less than eight times in 10,000 simulations was there a 4-24 stretch. So statistically, it's an incredible outlier. We just lived it. So why did it happen? How do we avoid it ever happening again? What do we learn from it? And how do we push forward? But again, the pushback to the narrative of these are the darkest days in the franchise's history. We did this in September of 2012, and we learned from it. We grew from it. We got better from it. And that's our challenge right now is we need to do it again.
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager. We're coming away from historic Bowman Field in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. More of the show coming up on the Pirates Baseball Network. We are back with the Neil Huntington Show, and we're going to continue after we pause for station identification. Pirates continue what turns out to be really a nine-game homestand back at PNC Park tomorrow night, first of four against the Washington Nationals. Their time will be 6:40, but hope to see you there as the Pirates host the Nationals and then the Reds in town next weekend. Let's pause now on the Pirates Baseball Network. And a reminder that Tuesday night is a pup night. Every Tuesday home game this season, $36 includes a human and dog ticket and a donation to local animal shelters. Advanced tickets required. Go to pirates.com/pups. Neil, the tough, tough news this week, of course, the second Tommy John surgery for Jameson Taillon. Nobody really was anticipating. I think it seemed to me like the organization, you included, like you didn't want to talk about it. You knew it was a possibility, but you were looking to be positive. Understandably, you and I talked about how Taillon felt like things were moving in the right direction. But I can't imagine what the news was like for him when he woke up after the surgery and what it was like for others in the organization like yourself when you found out it was Tommy John.
It was tough. There's no doubt about that. And we were certainly optimistic that it was only going to be a flexor repair surgery. And every available medical test showed that it was flexor related, that the ligament was intact. And the challenging part about Tommy John surgery sometimes and the challenging part about medicine sometimes is the doctor doesn't really know what he's facing or she's facing until they open the patient up. And in this situation, again, every clinical test from multiple doctors, our own to the best in the world at this, They felt that it was going to be a flexor repair, which is one part of the elbow. Right below that flexor is the ligament. They got in there. Dr. Olchek, who did Jameson's first surgery, who's a very, very highly respected surgeon, as he began the surgical process, as Jameson was under anesthesia, he was able to determine that while the ligament was intact, there was enough laxity in it that it would cause him future issues if it was not replaced. And so the flexor was repaired, the ligament was replaced. It's a second Tommy John. Unfortunately, or fortunately, what used to be an unheard of occurrence is now becoming more common, and more players are having second Tommy Johns. There's a couple guys that have even had three. The success rate is not as high as a one-time success rate, but if there's a young man that we are going to bet on that I would say is going to do everything in his power to get the most out of this body, to get the most out of this rehab, that's going to attack this and be one of the success stories, because there are success stories, it's Jameson Taillon. But no, tough news. It makes no difference whether he had flexor repair in July or in September, whether he was going to be able to play. It makes no difference whether if he needed the second Tommy John and he had the surgery in May, he's still out all of 2020. So the timing of it is really, truly irrelevant. We wanted to exhaust conservative treatment as best that we could. You always want to, because the success of coming back from no surgery is much higher than coming back from flexor tendon surgery, which is higher than coming back from flexor tendon and Tommy John. So you'd like to go conservative, but there's a misrepresentative narrative out there that this surgery should have been done sooner to get him back in 2020. This surgery could have been done the first time he had issues, and if we had gone in there at that point in time, and the only way to know that he needed another Tommy John was to get in there, and if that was done in April or May, it still makes no difference. He's missing 2020 as well.
Neil, did he have an option? Not to be harsh, but could he have decided, you know, I'm going to just roll with what I've got?
Sure. And that was part of the pre-surgical process that Jameson walked through with Dr. Olchek, and we gave our best advice and guidance. And if Dr. Olchek had gotten in there and said, okay, the ligament isn't torn, it's still functional, if we go with the flexor repair, you might be successful. Jameson could have opted to not have the Tommy John. The unfortunate reality is the odds are extreme that would be successful. His ligament was loosened. I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. His ligament was not tight enough to protect the flexor. And had we just done the flexor repair, at some point in time, that ligament's looseness was going to put the flexor back in harm's way, and now we probably would need another flexor and probably a Tommy John at that point in time. So while, yes, he had a choice, no, he really didn't. Medically, he really had no choice, and that's why Dr. Olchek and Jameson walked through the process before the surgery. Hopefully I get in there and it's only a flexor repair, but there is a chance I get in there and this ligament is either torn, which is possible, or loose and needs to be replaced. That's why that decision was made pre-surgery. If you find it, then let me know. And that's where Jameson, when he woke up from the surgery, he could feel that his hamstring was sore, because that's where they take the tendon. They take the tendon out of the hamstring and replace the ligament in the elbow with that tendon from the hamstring or from the wrist. And so Jameson knew pretty much immediately when he woke up that his hamstring was sore, so he knew he had Tommy John without even having to ask the question.
Can't even imagine. We'll continue. We'll finish up from historic Bowman Field, Pirates Cubs, Little League Classic. More to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. Last moments here with the Pirates general manager, just continuing with the Jameson Taillon situation. Neil, I just went because I've heard the criticism that it's important to understand that Jameson Taillon was doing everything he could to avoid Tommy John surgery. That has to be understood by everyone when it comes to this thing. Oh, you should have had the surgery. Well, if you had the choice between not Tommy John and not having Tommy John, you'd prefer not to have it.
Yes, Jameson Taillon's end game is to come back and be the best pitcher he possibly can be for the Pittsburgh Pirates. The Pittsburgh Pirates' end game is to have Jameson Taillon come back and be the best possible pitcher he can be for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Every single doctor that he saw, their end game is to have Jameson Taillon come back and be the best possible pitcher he can be. So whether it was he wasn't trying to avoid surgery, he was going through the medically accepted, medically standard protocol Those that think that Tommy John just get it done and it's in a performance enhancement, I think we've talked about that in the past. There are some parents that think their 16-year-old should have Tommy John because players get better because of Tommy John surgery, and that is absolutely false. You want to avoid surgery if you can at all costs, because some do come back better, but they don't come back better because of the surgery. They come back better because their body's in better shape. They've had the game threatened to be taken away from them. They don't come back better because the doctor double wrapped their ligament and now they throw harder. They come back better because they're hungrier, they're in better shape, and all of a sudden they're pitching for something different than they were pitching before. Jameson didn't need any of that. He's already gone through that. But the notion that we should have done it earlier, or he should have done it earlier, the notion that we should have just gone to surgery right away, those are both just not the way medicine works, not the way baseball teams work, not the way players work, and they're just false narratives. That they're inaccurate narratives and not the way it works, nor would it have had any benefit to us to just rush to Tommy John surgery.
Now we've got a couple minutes left, and what I've been saying is, for me, in my opinion, not having talked to you or anybody else, it's just a fan, that even if it had been just the flexor tendon, you still weren't going to have Tyone for, knowing you guys, it's going to be major. You're going to be super conservative. So almost having Tyone would have been a bonus. Now, Tyone's out of the equation. I personally believe if this team's going to compete, Neil, you've got to find a way to get some pitching in here.
It certainly makes it more logical to plan that Jameson Tyone isn't going to be here. And how do we get Joe Musgrove to continue to turn that corner, the things that we're seeing? How do we continue to get Chris Archer to be Chris Archer again? How do we get Mitch Keller to take that next step forward? How do we help Trevor Williams go back to being as good as Trevor Williams was second half of last season, when he was one of the top three or four pitchers in the game? How do we get that Trevor Williams back again and get him healthy? Get Chris Archer a full baseball offseason. Get Joe Musgrove a full baseball offseason. Can we continue to get Steve Brault to push this forward? And can he be as good as he's been here statistically in the second half? What externally is available for us to add to the rotation, whether it's depth? Is there another Francisco Liriano out there? Is there another Volquez out there? Is there another Jay Happ out there? We'll explore that. Our bullpen, we have good arms. They've pitched well for stretches. They've not pitched well for stretches. How do we get Keller back to being Keller? Crick back to being Crick? Rodriguez back to being Rodriguez? We get Edgar Santana healthy next year. We get Chad Kuhl healthy next year. And, of course, you lock it down with Felipe Vasquez in a high-leverage situation. So the talent is there. How do we put it together? How do we add to it and make it better? And that's the question that we have to answer here in September. And as we go through the offseason, how do we add to this group? How do we maximize this group? Because, again, I'll get crushed for saying this. The core of the 13 team was that 2012 team.
Well, we'll get back to this next Sunday and look forward to tonight. Enjoy this great, great night, Neil. A lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
It's a great night for baseball and a great night for these players.
And for Steve Blass, this is his first and only trip into Williamsport and Bowman Field. We're going to talk to Steve about his thoughts regarding this trip and more. Our pregame show is next on the Pirates Baseball Network.